thanks for joining us. We're going to get started. Today's going to go quick. We're just doing an hour today, and it looks like we've got lots of questions lined up. I'm not going to do much of an open. We're going to get right to questions, so there may still be some room. If you want to get in with a question, a comment, a topic, you better press one on your phone pretty quick. Let's get started.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs,
back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. We take your calls and answer your questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, taxes, technology, health and fitness on the road, getting started as an owner-operator, finding freight, working with brokers, getting your authority, you name it, we'll talk about it. All you have to do is pick up the phone and call. And I think I'm going to skip an open tonight. These hours during the week just fly by, so we're going to try to get to as many calls as we can tonight. We're going to start off in Illinois. Chris, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. Thanks for taking my call.
What can I help you with tonight?
I feel like I'm fighting a losing battle here. I'm trying to get better fuel mileage. I bought an FLD. You know, I got it on the way home from the CMC last year. It seems like every month it's dropping like 1/10 of a mile per gallon. This past week, I stopped there in Kansas City and had the guys install a weed burner exhaust with a Pittsburgh Power high-flow muffler. And okay, the way the exhaust used to come straight out, through, you know, out of the turbo right there between the frame and the chassis. It would tee out. There's one elbow to get straight up on the sides. Well, when they installed this weed burner, they had to install three 90-degree elbows right there by the turbo to get it to go down and under the chassis. And I'm just wondering, did I negate everything I was trying to do?
I think so. And this is tricky because every combination of trucks I look at is different when it comes to where you can possibly route the exhaust based on the engine, the configuration, the sleeper. So what we do when we look at this is we kind of map out what you already have first and then say, can we make this better? And there are a couple things we're looking at. One, the total length of the exhaust system. The longer it gets, the more restriction you have. Two are any bends. 90-degree, obviously, are the worst. If we can do the same thing with 245s, that actually helps ease the flow. But we want to minimize the bends. We want to minimize the length. And the other thing is, a stack that has to go up, you're fighting gravity. So a stack that goes down, it naturally, even if it has the same number of bends and the same length, but it goes down instead of up, is going to have less back pressure. But it's really difficult, you know, unless we measure the pressure on every possible configuration, which just isn't practical. We kind of have to guess.
Right.
If you added, you know, again, it's hard to say, but adding, you know, 390 degrees. You must have had at least one before, right?
No, they added three onto the initial 90. Oh. So I guess there's four there.
And there used to be one, so we had three.
Right. It used to come straight back. Now it goes down, in, and back.
And I've looked at trucks where I've said, you know what? I don't think this is going to do any good to try to change this because of there are some, configurations like that you just can't find a good straight way to put the exhaust anywhere. My guess is you're probably going to come out about even.
Yeah. Do you think that ported manifold would do any good?
Oh, absolutely. That always does. I mean, we know that is the first point of restriction is the manifold. I mean, that's the first place the exhaust gas hits, and that's the first place where we have restriction. That's why we do the ported and coated manifolds, because it really improves flow. That's probably the biggest improvement on flow we see.
Okay, maybe I should go by Pittsburgh and see if they can put that on and see if they have any ideas of getting it more straight.
They may have some ideas. They're pretty good at that. And, you know, they could look at the next point of restriction is the turbo. So we go with the bigger housing that opens the flow up there. Pittsburgh Power is really good at that stuff. I would get it in there and at least let them look at it.
Yeah, I'll have to do that. I appreciate it, Kevin.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Let's see. We're going to head off to Indiana. Chris, welcome to the program.
Thanks for taking my call, Kevin.
What can I help you with today?
I have a truck that I put a lot of work into. I put a lot of money into it. Then it had a problem. I don't know exactly what the problem is. I called in a few weeks ago. It's a 6NZ Caterpillar. Maybe a blown head gasket, maybe a cracked head. 1.3 million miles on it. In 2015, I put $35,000 into the truck. I mean, it's got everything, the manifold, the turbo from Pittsburgh Power, the muffler, the fast, the OPS, new fuel lines, new radiator, light clutch, you name it. So I really didn't want to sell. Yeah. I didn't want to sell it. And I put more money into that the year before and been sitting since last January. I really didn't want to sell it, but I'm getting out of trucking, I'm pretty sure, at the end of the year. And I've got another truck that I'm driving. And I'm just trying to figure out what, you know, it's a great engine. It's 6NZ. I mean, the oil samples are magnificent. I mean, I've got the last 100,000 miles, not an issue.
Right.
Change the oil every 12. And, you know, it's a good engine. I don't know if I should take the engine out and just sell the engine and try. I mean, I don't really have the time or the place to, like, part it out. If I should just take it to, you know, I talked to a guy at a junkyard because – see if I could take the engine out and he'd take the rest. And he said he's probably not interested without the engine.
Right.
Should I put it in truck paper? I mean, I don't know. I'm kind of, honestly, the reason I'm calling into your show is because I know you have people listening that are interested in this sort of thing. You know, what's your advice?
You know what I would do? Because it doesn't sound like you're in a hurry. I mean, you've got a truck to drive. You're going to finish out this year. You know, unless you just absolutely have to have the money, and it doesn't sound like it, I would take my time and, you know, hit all the places that our listeners are. You know, I can't do them on the air because every time we do that, we get 87 calls with somebody that wants to sell something and we have to start turning them down. So we just have to tell people we can't turn the show into a swap and shop. I'd almost like to do a podcast every week just for that, but I don't have time. Maybe I can find another host that wants to do that because I think it might be kind of a cool show. I just don't have time to do it. But if the Facebook groups, you know, that are associated with Let's Truck, the 9 Mile Per Gallon Club, the Trucking with Authority, I mean, we have a dozen or more, you know, Facebook groups that have kind of, some of them are our group, some of them are listeners that have kind of formed around our ideas. I would just start hitting those. And, you know, obviously our listeners like pre-emission, they like 6NZ, they like all the modifications you've done. They would be your best bet to sell this truck. So for now, I would just start hitting them everywhere you can find them and see if you can sell it.
Okay. That's great. That's good advice. I didn't think about the Facebook angle. I was going to take my time. I was going to try truck paper first. At the end of the day, I got a guy.
I would try that too. I mean, that, you know, you Craigslist. Okay. Now, when I do this kind of stuff, I tend to just blanket everything rather than drag it out for months. I just go hit everything. Hit, you know, eBay, hit Craigslist, hit truck paper, hit Facebook. And just kind of flood the market till it sells.
Okay. Fair enough. Yeah, I guess pretty simple answer. Sorry to bother you with such a dumb question, but you have a good day, all right?
Yeah, not at all. I mean, many times when we're in the situation, it's kind of hard for us to see the answer. And sometimes all it takes is somebody from the outside looking at it, go, oh, yeah, we'll do this. That's what the show's all about. Let's go to Georgia. Eric, welcome to the program.
Good day, sir. You should have an oil sample. It's the second sample that I've taken since installing the OPS.
Got it. Okay.
So we've got. I'm hoping you can explain base and what affects that number.
So this is an ISX. What year?
It's in a 2015.
What year's the engine, though?
2015.
Okay, when you say it's in a 2015, I just wanted to make sure this wasn't a glider kit or something like that. Yeah, so it's a 2015 model ISX.
Correct.
So there's 312,000 miles on the engine and about 50,000 on the oil. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay, let me. There's the music. Let me get to a break, and I will come back, and we will talk about this. So stick around. We'll be right back and we'll go over the results. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Check out the website. It's letstruck.com. We have some awesome new products in there. We have some of the best beef sticks you will ever taste, and they are grass-fed, grass-finished, super high quality, no junk. They're even fermented. They taste awesome. Check them out at letstruck.com in the health store. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. I'm going to go back to the phones. I was talking with Eric in Georgia. So, Eric, I'll explain base, and then I'm a little concerned about the oil sample, but I'm not sure why we're starting to see wear metals jump up. They're not horrible. I wouldn't say we do anything now. We'll probably wait for the next sample and see what happens. I also don't know why your base is dropping. I know normally why base drops, but I'm a little concerned about yours, and I'm going to have a recommendation for you, I think. So base is like an acid. So during the combustion process, we build up a lot of acids, and those acids obviously are very hard on the engine. They're hard on the parts, all parts. So we don't want the oil to become acidic. So what we put base in the oil. And you could literally take Tums, the antacid that people take, and crush it up and put it in your oil, and it would do the exact same thing. So would baking soda. There are lots of substances that are very alkaline, and they will neutralize acid. And that's all the base in oil is. It's there to neutralize acid. As the base neutralizes acid, it becomes depleted. So we have to keep adding to the base. Now, when people change oil every 15,000 miles, this is never an issue because there's always plenty of base available. But when we do extended drains, we do have to watch the base. And there are a couple ways we could add it back in without changing the oil. Lubrifiner actually makes a filter now that has base impregnated right into the filter. So you spin the filter on, and as the oil flows through, it picks up the new base. And they work great. In fact, they work so good. When they first came out, I was having people, if they had two filters, I was having them put both on, and we were getting too much base. Which really doesn't hurt anything, but there was no point in spending the extra money. So I started telling people, put one standard filter on and one of the lubrifiers, and that seems to be just about perfect. That may be what we have to do with your truck. because there doesn't seem to be any obvious reason why we're losing base. You have no fuel dilution, you have no soot, you have no water, you have no coolant. Those are the things that would normally attack the base. For some reason, your engine is just burning very acidic. I don't know why. I don't see any reason here, and I wouldn't recommend going to look for it because we'll never find it.
Okay.
So you have a couple options. One, every now and then we find a particular oil that doesn't seem to work well with a particular engine. There's no pattern. Like one oil will just not do well with this particular engine, but you can put that oil in every other engine. It works just fine. So when I say this, I'm not slamming any particular oil. We've never been able to find a pattern. It's just sometimes you just change oil and the problem goes away. So if you were using Chevron, I might recommend Rotella. If you're using Rotella, I might recommend Chevron. Just to try something different because your base is dropping and I don't really see any reason why it is. So the first thing I would say is your base is still okay. It's not so far down that it's going to hurt anything. So you could leave this until the next sample, or you could just go ahead and change the oil now. But if you do, I would try a different brand. And then let's see what happens. If the base keeps going away like this, but there are no other problems with the oil, then I would say leave the oil in and use the filters to replenish your base.
That makes sense. Now, when you say change brands, what about going from mineral to synthetic?
You could try that.
Make a difference?
Yeah, it sometimes it does because they use a different formulation of additives in their blends or their full synthetic. So yeah, you can even stick with the same line like you're using Shell. You could stick with Shell and just try a different oil.
Okay, that helps a lot. I've actually got an appointment next week with Pittsburgh Power. This truck's going in there for the after treatment and the intake manifold and the ECM program.
Okay. Yeah,
just change the oil while we're there.
Yeah, that wouldn't be a bad idea. Let's just get a reset on this because, like I say, 50,000 miles, we shouldn't see the base drop that fast. Sometimes it's just a bad batch of oil, too. Sometimes that mix just didn't get enough of the base in it to start with. Because I'm looking at your previous sample and the base was already really low on that one. So it could have just been the oil itself. I don't see anything to worry about, but it might not be a bad idea to change the oil and reset. Let's see. Let's go to Massachusetts. Everson, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. Thanks for taking my call.
Welcome.
I found a 99 Freightliner FLD. My question is, the owner says it has brand new Michelin tires, but the truck's been sitting since 2009, exposed to the weather. Will that damage the tires in any way?
I personally, even though if they're brand new Michelins, there's probably many thousands of dollars worth of tires on that truck right now, I wouldn't run with them.
Yeah.
I just wouldn't do it. I mean, now we're talking 5 years is kind of my limit. When a tire's been out on the road or sitting somewhere, unless it's been in a garage, covered up, you know, not exposed to the light, even then we have humidity problems. I'm a freak about tires. These are now 8 years old, just sitting. I can almost guarantee you're going to have a tire problem if you run these things.
Okay.
Now here's the thing.
Thank you very much, Kevin.
Here's the thing. I wouldn't have any problem whatsoever selling them.
Okay.
I wouldn't scrap them. If they're new, somebody out there will buy them. Let them deal with them.
Okay. I'll try that if I got the truck then. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I would. And there are people... You know, and if you wanted to be completely upfront, you could point it out to somebody, but this is almost a case of buyer beware. There are people where if they know the tire's 8 years old, but you give them a good enough deal, they'll take it. So I'm not trying to rip anybody off, but I don't want to run them. I'm really, really picky about tires. And you know what? They may be fine, but I'm not going to take that chance. If somebody else wants to, I'll tell them, here's why I'm selling them. It's up to you. And I'd make them a good deal, but I'd get some money out of these if they were mine. Let's go to Minnesota. Greg, welcome to the program.
Hey, good afternoon, Kevin. Thanks for the call. Taking it anyway. I'm calling in about kind of like man's best friend, and I get this from your Destination Health show, but I got this dog. Well, we got three dogs, but the one's a pretty big dog, and he's come down with diabetes, and we were feeding him a certain brand of dog food, and after listening to your show, come to read that with all the carbohydrates and stuff in it, I'm sure that's why his blood sugar shot up so high. At one point in time, he was so ill that it was up to 500 some. And we brought that down, and then here last week it spiked up again. But he's on like 27 units of insulin, 2 times a day. But my wife has been using the slow cooker, and I know this sounds weird, but there may be a trade-off in the expensive dog foods versus like a paleo diet with chicken breasts, cauliflower, broccoli. And we mix that with some dog food that is grain-free. And I don't know if I can say the names over the air, but I don't know if I should or not, but...
Yeah, that's fine.
One is Origin, Six Fish, which I think is a good dog food. And then the other one is Taste of the Wild, which is a good dog food. But then we kind of switched dog foods a little bit here, and we're not sure which dog food kind of elevated his blood sugar level here last week. But I'm thinking it was maybe the Taste of the Wild because it's got potatoes in it.
I want to make this real simple because we've overcomplicated our own diet. We don't understand it. We've done even worse for our dogs. So when you look at the natural diet of a human being, as hunter-gatherer, our diet was pretty complex. We would eat. As a human, we will eat almost anything that won't poison us. And that's okay. We evolved that way. We can eat animals. Yep. We can eat plants. We can eat things out of the ocean. We can eat, you know, leaves and greens and virtually everything. So trying to figure out what our best diet is can be a little more complicated. But let's take dogs. Dogs, all dogs are descendants of wolves. All dogs are descendants of wolves. In the wild, what is a wolf?
Fresh killed food.
Meat. Nothing else. Dogs are not omnivores. We are omnivores. We can eat vegetables, plants, animals. Dogs are carnivores. And carnivores, just like we talk about cows being herbivores, should only eat grass. Dogs are omnivores. They should only eat meat. And I know the veterinarians will argue that up and down. Look at some of the top dog trainers and how they feed their dogs. Raw chicken is one of the most common foods for high-end kind of show dogs. So stick around. We'll talk about that a little more when we get back. Kevin Rothenberg. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're going to get right back to the phone calls. I was talking with Greg in Minnesota. So, you know, Greg, I did the same thing. You look at some of these dog foods and the higher end dog foods, and they have all this fish, which is wonderful. And then you start seeing things like carrots and peas and blueberries, and that's not stuff dogs eat. And there are carbohydrates in all of that. And if we look at the human body, we can handle some carbohydrates, but when we eat the standard American diet, it makes us sick. Dogs have a lot less tolerance for carbohydrates because it's not part of their natural diet, never has been. So I do buy a good high-end dry dog food, and it's very similar to what you have right here. So these are fine, but a bag of that stuff will last us months, because what,
really?
What diesel, yeah, what diesel eats every day is whatever protein we are eating that day. If I'm having eggs for breakfast, he might get some eggs.
Yeah.
If I have tuna fish for lunch, he's going to get tuna fish. Every Tuesday, Diesel and I do Liver Tuesday. I cook up a pound of liver. He gets half and I get half. And he eats meat. Lots and lots of lean protein. Lean protein is actually better for a dog. So he does eat some of the fatty meats that we eat, but I tend to save the leaner cuts for him. So, if I do a whole chicken, I'll eat the thighs and the drumsticks with the skin on. Diesel will get the breast with no skin. Dogs do really well on lean protein and a little bit of fat, probably more than a little bit compared to what most people think of. So where I eat 80% fat and 15% protein, he might get 60 or 70% protein and then a little bit of the rest of it in fat and almost no carbohydrates. Again, carbohydrates
Does he eat it more raw or is it prepared the same? I mean, because in the wild it's raw.
Yeah, and raw is good. Dogs can eat raw chicken. Like raw chicken will make us sick. Raw chicken doesn't bother dogs. The top trainers, that's what they feed their dogs, raw chicken. A raw diet for dogs. I do mixed. So there are some things every night he gets a raw marrow bone. He loves those. There's a little bit of raw meat outside, the raw marrow. If I make ground beef or any kind of beef, it is extremely rare, which is kind of the way I like mine anyway. So he gets some cooked, but I always try to keep his more rare, really, really rare. And then sometimes he gets raw.
Well, my goal is to get this dog off of insulin just because I know it's not good for him and the cost is up there, so it's just, I can see this with the diet, how we eat, and I compare this to that, and it's just, we were doing milk bones, and those things are bad for dogs. I'm just saying that. Bridget, it's almost like they got crack cocaine in them because they crave them so much, it's unreal.
And they're like us. If they get too much of that, they won't eat their regular food, and they won't get any nutrition. The way I see it, in the wild, a wolf would really eat a zero carbohydrate diet. I mean, not a low carb diet, zero carb. So I think the closer we get to zero carb on a dog, the better he's going to do, especially if he has blood sugar control problems. Now, this should fix it.
All right. Well, that's what we'll shoot for. We're definitely going to try that. I have a next question too.
Yep. Go ahead.
So I'm a lease operator. I pull for a carrier. And the question would be, if I buy parts for my truck, whatever that may be, and let's say it's $1,000, and I can run it through their account, and then they take that off my settlement versus writing a check out for it and paying for it myself with the tax deduction. I know you know where I'm coming from here, but I don't know what is good. I got an idea that if I run it through the carrier and they just deduct that off my settlement, that's good because that's money that I spend that I really don't earn that paid the parts. Whereas listening to you the other day, it's like $1,000, $3,300 for deduction.
Yeah, no, it doesn't matter. You deduct it the exact same way on your tax return, no matter which way you purchase it.
Oh, really? All right.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. So whatever is more convenient for you, just do it that way. How you purchase it won't have any effect on your tax return whatsoever.
Oh, all right. Well, I was looking at that So if I buy it through the carrier, that's like money that I never really get. Is that correct or not?
No, it's not. Because here's the way the accounting should be done. Carriers, we deduct a lot of expenses for owner-operators, fuel, insurance, all kinds of things. But you're always going to report the gross income you received from the carrier. So at the end of the year, the carrier is going to give you a 1099, and they're going to say, you earned $142,327.23 gross. And that's the only document they're going to give you for your taxes. It's up to you to know where all your expenses are. Now, you need to go to your settlements and start deducting all the things that were charged off your settlement.
Oh, I see. All right. That sheds some light on it then. Cool. Awesome. Well, I like that saying that you say at the beginning, you're welcome to your world, but I don't know if you know this, your world is like our world out here, and it's really good that you do what you do for us, so thank you.
Well, you know, I a lot of people probably don't know this. I kind of stole that open, but it's more of a tribute than me just stealing it. I fell in love with talk radio like the first week I was in a truck. I started listening to talk radio and just absolutely loved it. And Bruce Williams, I listened to him for decades, just an amazing guy in a lot of ways. And he would always open his show, Welcome to My World. And it just, I get goosebumps when I hear it. So it's more of a tribute to him. He retired. He's not doing talk radio anymore. But that's kind of my little tribute to Bruce Williams.
Well, I like it, and it's very true to all of us, so thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Let's see. Let's go to Arizona. Adam, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. Hey, before we take a look at the profit and or the profit gauges, I want to make a comment about your stuff over the weekend. I tried to get through a few times, but you know, working and driving doesn't make that happen sometimes.
I've
been listening for, you know, it's been a while, and the whole thing with you and the guy with the fair tax and stuff like that, you know, to me, and everything that you do, you know, related to trucks and helping understand better what we do and how we do it to make it a better situation for everybody, is kind of different than talk radio to an extent, meaning that, like, just listening to it reminded me of it's basic psychology 101, really, the psyche. And you know, facts are what you can make someone else believe, because a fact, right, doesn't have to be a fact. It can be someone else's opinion, but they are so strongly opinionated that it becomes a fact. So
yes,
you know, the whole thing that you were talking about over the weekend reminded me of the whole thing with War of the Worlds, the radio show where they put the whole country in a panic.
Oh,
and
yeah.
What I mean by that is, you bring up subjects that interest you, and there's always going to, it doesn't matter what the facts are, there's always going to be people in this country who are going to be on one side or the other, regardless of what the truth is. But the funny thing that I find amusing about a lot of the stuff that you bring up, and my opinion on it doesn't matter because I don't know the facts. So, you know, the whole thing with the autonomous trucks and, you know, this and that, everything that you discuss is just speculation. It's just another way to get a rise out of somebody. So, you know, you feel challenged at the end of the day, and it's amusing to me. I thought it was hilarious over the weekend because, you know, you get a rise out of so many people that would otherwise just be, they'd be happy to be in a communist country just taking orders, and you give them a reason to argue. And I find that amusing.
Well, it's an interesting observation, and I agree. And it, you know, I've been talking about the fair tax for a long time, and very seldom do I ever find somebody I can discuss it with that knows a lot about it. There are some people that know a little bit. Most of the people who want to dispute me on it usually are clueless, and it doesn't take long to figure that out. Now, this guy...
That's because you would say something that would make them pissed off.
Yeah. Now, this guy, when it comes to pure information about the ins and outs, the facts of our current tax system and the fair tax, he could quite possibly know more than I do. And that's pretty unusual. Not saying that I'm smarter than everybody else. I just read more and I study more, and this is what I do. But obviously, he did too. But it's at a certain point, I decided There's no point in debating. He knows all the facts. I know all the facts. He has his opinion and I have mine. We're not going to change each other with a new fact because we already both know all the facts. We've made up our mind. But it still may make an interesting show somewhere. We'll see. I'm going to come right back to you, Adam. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're going to get back to the calls. We're down to the final segment. So, yeah, Adam, you know, as far as him and I talking, we're not going to change each other. We both know the facts. We've made up our mind. But I think it may make an interesting conversation for people who don't understand it to get two people who really get it but have totally different, you know, interpretations of how it would work in the real world.
Right. Now, and the reason I was saying that was, just for an example, now, I'm not a college-educated person, but I'm a very well-read person just because of situation, but I read a lot of psychology books, and I understand a lot of behavior. If you put that guy in your spot and let him talk for months and months and months about the fair tax, your listeners would be against it over a period of time, and that's just... That's just a plain fact. I don't care who gets pissed off and how many people cuss at me, whatever. It's just a fact. I mean, it's just part of the psyche. You believe what you hear. You know, if you hear it enough, it's the truth. Just like how many times do you have to say your name before somebody knows it? So
you're absolutely correct. There's another point here, too. People who listen to me over a long period of time, I have to believe that if they keep listening, it's because they trust my opinion. So that's just one more factor. If you said, if you hear something over and over, you're going to believe it. You're right. If you hear it from somebody you really trust, it's not even going to take that long. You're not going to hear it. And you're right. That's what happens.
Right. Well, you know, the reason I listened to you in the beginning, and you're at a point in your career, if I'm not mistaken, where you've established that your ideas and your philosophies on fuel mileage, tires, other things, they work. It's not a philosophy anymore. It's a fact. So you've proven what you came out to prove, and now you just want to start shit. So I get it. That's all it comes down to anymore. But I just found it amusing, and I thought I'd give you my little commentary. It doesn't mean much, but, you know, I was just, when you were talking the whole time, it just reminded me of all the real basic psychology books I read, just sitting there going, man, people are stupid. And, you know, it's crazy. And for the gentleman in Minnesota about the dog food stuff, you know, the wife and I, the wife more than I, but she raised huskies for many, many years. And the best food other than the whole food, like you said, is going to be Victory. And you can get it at most animal feed places that you get for, you know, horses. And it's called Victory. And it is the best stuff that you can buy for dogs that's not whole food just because of the way they make it. But, you know, for certain animals anyways. And, you know, and that's all. I thought it was interesting and made me laugh. You know, we are an opinionated people, but, you know, you know, for the most part, we're a community, which is, you know, based them from the word communist.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just.
That's
true. I'm
not
saying I'm a communist. I'm not a communist, but I'm a free thinker. But I want you to take a look at the profit gauges.
I will. Ahead. You know, the funny thing is, though, we never refer to this as a community. We refer to it as a tribe.
You want to keep away from the word communist because, you know, we don't want to go back to the 50s.
That's right.
Yeah. You know what? You don't want Trump looking at you for some rude reason.
Yeah. So P&L, business report, any specific things we're looking at here?
Well, we had a different number the last time I showed it to you. And we got with CLA and they made us change a few things and it dropped our net down for the year a little bit. So we got CLA doing our stuff again, and they gave us some pointers on some stuff that we needed to take out, put in, and we had a few mistakes, so we took care of everything, and that's what you're looking at now is the final thing that they have, and that's what they're working on.
Got it. Okay. And yeah, I'm not comparing it to what I used to see, and your numbers are so big, really, that it's sometimes it's hard to get your head around a number that's so far out of the norm. You know, when I look at a normal business report, the numbers just click and they make sense. So I don't remember. I know your numbers were crazy high off the charts. Now you're at 359 a mile for all miles, which is just incredible. Your report's a little harder to read because I have to go to profit per mile, plus you take a wage as a driver. So even after you pay the drivers, you pay yourself, you pay all the expenses on the trucks, everything, there's still 57 cents a mile left in profit. That's not including what you made. So,
I think I was at 60,000 this year.
Yeah. So in that 57 cents a mile, there's multiple trucks here. So you're really at $88,000 in profit plus your 60 as a wage. You're in the $140,000 range. You're one of those damn one percenters everybody protests about.
Be quiet. That's not true.
It is. Go look up the statistics.
Oh, I know.
You make $140,000 a year, it puts you way up into the top percentile.
Right. And then, the crazy thing for me is, I keep forgetting about is the extra wages that we pay because I pay the driver, you know, we do it the right way. We pay his taxes and we pay his salary. And we don't do the 1099 crap because I wouldn't do that to my worst enemy. And,
exactly.
So, you know, that takes away from some of the profit, but it keeps my, you know, it keeps my driver happy and it keeps my customer happy.
Well, it's the right way to do things. I wish we had a fair tax and we didn't have to screw around with that, but the rules are the rules and we should be paying drivers like employees. I'm with you.
Yeah. And the only reason I did that is because of you. So, you know, I might talk shit about you're just trying to cause problems, but everything that I'm talking about is because of listening to the show for a really long period of time and just, you know, applying some of the stuff that I know works. And I'm just waiting to get back some information about the truck, but more than likely, I mean, we've already pretty much purchased the truck, the 2000 FLD, and I'm just going to rebuild it. It just, you know, this is just for something to do. And an update also on the company in the California run. See, we've been doing that flat rate for so long now, for over a year, and they were getting upset that they thought they were paying us too much money and sometimes they were and sometimes they weren't. And so they came back at us I think I told you the weekend before we did another proposal and we just decided to do everything per pound. So everything, the exact number that we talked about at 10 cents a pound is now how we're going to be charging everything. And the funny thing about it is there's a good chance I might make more money and there's a good chance I might make a little bit less money, but we're going to be damn near close to the middle and right about the same. So it's funny because numbers, people who deal with, I mean, I'm not even a half of a percent of the amount of money this company makes in this little run. Right. I mean, I'm not even a flea on, I'm the tick on top of the tick that someone threw away compared to the money that they're making. And it's funny because, you know, there's a chance I can make more, but there's a chance that I'll break even and there's a chance I might make a few thousand less, but we're not talking a large amount of money, a swing either way, but they were happy to see a certain number.
And that's a good thing. I think you negotiated this really well. And you're right. That's a good place to be. You know, I have some companies that I work with that are very, very small. So the deals I cut with them to them are a very big deal. And they absolutely have to get a lot of value out of that deal. And we have to work hard to provide that. Then on the other end of the spectrum, I've got Michelin, who like you said, I don't even show up as a speck of dust on an eyelash to Michelin with their budget and what they spend us. But, you know, the individual people I deal with at Michelin, that's their budget, and they have to get a good value out of that. So it's nice when you've got a deal like that, when you're working with companies that do have lots of revenue, they can afford to pay a higher price for better value, and then you go in and you provide that value. That's what makes businesses successful. It's easy to get into business. You know, going out and getting a truck in today's world is drop dead easy. I can't think of many businesses easier to start. And you have immediate cash flow. I could buy a truck today and I could have revenue coming in before this Friday. Literally, that's not an exaggeration. I have some business ventures that, you know, I've been talking about one recently, the whole freeze-dried paleo keto meal kits. And as I look at this, I'm looking at a huge upfront investment, and it's going to take me quite a while to ever get my money back. Doesn't mean I won't do it, but I have to be very careful. Buying a truck, like I said, I could buy it today and have revenue on Friday. Pretty darn easy. Doesn't mean it's easy to be really successful. That's where it takes the hard work, but that's what separates the really good businesses from the average or so-so. I'm all out of time. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next show. Be safe, be profitable, be fit and healthy. Always do the hard work and master the journey. I'm Kevin Rutherford. All right, everybody, thanks for joining us. We'll see you tomorrow for the Power Hour and general questions. We'll see you then.